Guess what day it is?
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio. This is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Only there is no Steve Cochran here today. Steve's off for the rest of the week. It's Dean Richards filling in. And I gotta say, a nice reception for me this morning from Mary Vandeveld.
Oh.
What it's like, Steve keeps you all in chains?
Well, it's usually today.
I came into the room and I turned the lights on. You would have thought that I was passing out $100 bills to people in here.
I like it being nice and bright in the middle of the night, you know, and he keeps it like a cave and very cold, and it's warm in here and the lights are
like, you mean like you would do anywhere when the weather starts to change and it's kind of chilly outside?
Yeah.
And
but
dark?
Dave is mad because he likes it dark.
I'm used to it now, but he doesn't keep it cold. The building keeps it cold.
Well, I guess, but you know, the building probably has the heat on now. I think they do the switch over.
They have certain dates, I think.
Yes.
I think that's, and you know, now with the new owners, who knows if we're even going to get any heat.
Oh, that's true.
In here. We have to build our own bonfires.
I didn't think of it that way.
For heat. But anyway, nice to see you all.
Good to see you.
Good to have you.
Now that I can see.
Lots. That's right. Apparently, I've liberated the entire morning crew by turning the lights on. Who knew this was so easy to please this crowd? We've got lots going on today. As I had mentioned, the first performance of Hamilton in Chicago was last night. We're going to talk about that a little bit later on. We've got all kinds of things, but really the big story this morning that happened late last night was the death of former Israeli Prime Minister Shimon Peres. Joining us from Jerusalem this morning is ABC News correspondent Jordana Miller. Jordana, thank you very much for joining us. You know, this is obviously the top story here in the United States. I'm sure that it is in Israel this morning as well. What is what's the feeling and what's the tone? The country must feel like they've lost a beloved leader, father, grandfather, I would think.
Absolutely, Dean. There is such a sense of solemnity here, sadness, mourning, really across the political spectrum, everyone coming out to kind of talk about the real energy and the personality of Shimon Peres, his contributions to the country. I mean, he served as defense minister, twice as prime minister, then as president. He did two main projects in secret that benefited the country, the first being to spearhead the nuclear program in Dimona, which was a pillar of Israel's deterrence in its early years, and then later secretly pushing the peace deal with the Palestinians that resulted in the Oslo Peace Accords, which won him the Nobel Peace Prize. But on a personal level, aside from all those achievements, everybody talking about the optimism, the visionary he was, that he really pushed people to imagine a better Israel, a better future for Israel in this region, that he never gave up on the real a vision of peace, and that he really, almost like a preacher, spread the gospel to young generations of Jews, to Palestinians. So here, a huge sense of loss. Peres' body will be put, he will lie in state at the Israeli Knesset, the parliament, tomorrow. On Friday, Israel is expecting many world leaders to descend on Jerusalem for that funeral, including what we're hearing is the president, President Obama, though that has not been confirmed yet by the White House, the Clintons as well, both Hillary candidate, Democratic presidential nominee. So it's going to be a few days here of mourning and saying goodbye to this really one of the founding fathers of Israel.
Of what I have read of Shimon Peres, I mean, he was involved in government, Israeli government, from a young man working with the man who's considered to be the father of Israel, David Ben-Gurion. Can you talk a little about his history and sort of how he came up through the ranks, ascending to power, kind of falling from power for a short period, and so forth?
Sure. You know, Shimon Peres stands out among the Israeli founding fathers because he was not born here. He actually was born in Poland and came as a young man to Israel. He joined the Haganah, the precursor to the Israeli army, and then he went on to be, as you just mentioned, a disciple of David Ben-Gurion, the founding, the first president of Israel, first prime minister, I should say. And at a very young age, at the age of 30, Shimon Peres became the head of the defense ministry, and he was really tapped with trying to push forward Israel's armament. He's accredited with building up the army, and then with the secret program to make Israel a nuclear power. Then he ended up joining the Israeli Knesset and served for almost 50 years in the left-leaning parties. He had a on and off again relationship with Rabin, who was his big Yitzhak Rabin, who was his big rival in the Labor Party. But he ended up serving as his defense minister in the 70s, and there he oversaw the very daring raid on Entebbe, where the Israeli army went to Uganda and freed the Israeli hostages that had been taken, hijacked by Palestinian militants. And then, when everyone kind of thought Shimon Peres was on his way out, he just came right back. In the 80s, he served as a prime minister in a national government. And then in the 90s, spearheaded, really, it was, though we think of the Oslo Peace Accords as something, connected to Yitzhak Rabin, primarily because he gave his life for those accords, it really, we have to really give the credit to Shimon Peres, because Shimon Peres was the one who really spearheaded the whole project secretly, and then later got Rabin to get on board. So he did that, and then he served 7 years as Israel's president, really in the twilight of his late 80s. And there he became an ambassador for Israel's vision of peace, and brought so many people to this country. As a reporter here, we all remember him for the President's Conference, where he brought world leaders to Jerusalem for 3 days to talk about everything, everything that all the world's problems and how we could solve them. He was deeply curious and believed in technology and science. So this was, he was really a Renaissance man.
Yeah, and really so interesting how his views, how his perspective seemed to evolve as he became older and, never wavering from his devotion to Israel. But, looking at things maybe from a bigger picture, a more worldview picture, to try to end all the bloodshed and all the violence that region has gone through the years. Go ahead.
I was going to say, what's so extraordinary about Shimon Peres' life as well is that even with all the setbacks, the intifadas, the waves of violence, the buses that were blowing up here in the 90s, killing really tens of people at a time, he never gave up on trying to reach out to the Palestinians. And even when I was covering Ehud Olmert as the prime minister here, undoubtedly, we would find out about Shimon Peres' secret jaunts to Amman or to Europe to meet with the Palestinians that would come to light months later. So even though Prime Minister, the current Prime Minister, Benjamin Netanyahu, differed with Shimon Peres, disputed with him on points of the peace negotiations and the possibilities for peace, he said absolutely, he was one of our greatest leaders, and everything he did for peace really united the nation and united the world with us.
Chicagoans will remember a visit 2 years ago when Shimon Peres visited the city of Chicago, a project between the University of Chicago, and I think it was one of the larger universities. I'm sorry, I don't remember which one it was, but there was a project between a university in Israel and the University of Chicago. Our mayor, Rahm Emanuel, visited Israel the year prior, and then Shimon Peres came here to Chicago, and we're going to talk about that visit coming up a little bit later on in the program. Jordana, I appreciate you joining us this morning. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Dean.
It's Jordana Miller, ABC News in Jerusalem, live this morning on the death of Shimon Peres. Definitely one of the top stories in the world today that we'll be covering. Have we seen these presidential chias at all?
I have not yet. Not had the pleasure of seeing one yet.
Am I the only one that wants to know what color the hair is on the Donald Chia?
Yeah, how are they going to do that?
I got to look this up. Do you want to use magnolias in there for the orange?
Chicago Tribune delivers the stories that make the city with more journalists at home at work than any other local news source. Become a member today at chicagotribune.com.
I'm looking at a picture.
Oh, you see a picture?
I'm looking at a picture of the Chia Donald Trump.
Does he have, like, orange flowers coming out of his head, or how is that going to work?
Well, yeah, I mean, you've seen Chia pets before,
oh,
right?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Terracotta.
Right.
So the skin color is perfect.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Because he looks a little orange anyway.
Because he's a little orangey. He's mm-hmm. a little tangerine-esque. But the hair is green. It's just like regular Chia moss, whatever that is. It's really bizarre looking. I got to see, but the likeness, the facial likeness, it looks exactly like him.
Oh, I'm looking at the Hillary one. Yeah, that kind of looks like her.
What's
too,
the Hillary?
Well.
Is the Hillary one same thing?
She's got the
green hair.
Yeah, the green hair definitely kind of looks like a wig, you know. But her face looks like her, I think. Yeah.
I guess what a lovely gift it would be for somebody, right? If you're a fan of one or the other.
Well, yeah, or if you're not and you kill plants regularly like I do.
then you would need the Pence, Chia, or you'd need the second in command.
That's right. The Chia. Designated survivor of plants.
I'm stumbling with the computer here this morning.
Oh.
And far be it from me to complain, because I know Steve never does that about anything.
No.
I got two things going on here. So there was a reset on my iPhone last night. You know, they send out these updates.
Oh, the yes. iOS 10. Did you do it?
I didn't check what number it is. But okay. Yesterday I got the notice, do you want to update?
Right.
And I just said, do it later. And it did it overnight. And now my phone is like, it's like somebody else's phone I've got this morning, because everything's different on it.
Right. You power it up differently.
Yeah.
Messages come
everything's
across
different.
Differently.
The whole thing is different now. It's driving me nuts.
There is a magnifying glass there.
Is
there? Yeah, I'll show you how to do it.
Well, that's going
to
come in handy.
Yeah.
If I didn't already have the bifocals, that would really come in. And then there's something on the computer, too. There's like some update that's happened. I can't figure out anything today. Mary, you've got your hands full with me here today.
I do.
And nothing is working here.
I've done the update a couple days ago, so I can help you through
some
it
experience
because there was
on
some a learning curve, definitely. Mm-hmm. You can send text messages with invisible ink, though. So no one else can read them until you rub your finger on them. So you've got that feature going for you.
Oh, boy. Like, we need something else to worry about.
Yeah, so.
I just want to figure out how I get to my Pong app.
Just
that's the main thing I use my phone for, solitaire and Pong.
Oh, and you can't do that now.
Well, I'm sure it's in there somewhere. It's going to take me 10 times longer to get there. But wait, first, we have Dancing with the Stars. What?
Amber and Max, Rick and Emma, on this third week of competition, the couple with the lowest combined total of judges' scores and viewer votes, and therefore leaving right now, is...
Love the disco music.
Rick and Emma.
No, poor yes. former Texas Governor Rick Perry. He goes and invests in all those lovely silk shirts, and now he's got no place to wear them.
Did you see the Paso Doble outfit he had on last night?
I don't know what that means.
Well, he didn't either, but no, they had the, you know, the bullfight type outfit on. And then they showed
that.
A clip where right before he went, he was like, oh, my pants are falling down. And he starts pulling up his pants. I'm like, oh, boy.
We do not need to see anything
could
like
be
that.
Ugly.
So I don't really watch the show. I mean, I'm amused by the updates. Are you happy with that now? Because I mean,
oh, yeah.
you're the number one Dancing with the Stars fan.
This season is just kind of lame because there's not many people that are really, really good. I mean, Lori Hernandez is, of course, a gymnast. She's going
right.
to win.
She's gonna
or
be
she's
good.
And,
yeah.
and James Hinchcliffe? What the heck?
Hinchcliffe,
the race car driver. Yeah, he's good, but he's not really good. And then there's Mary Lou Henner, who sometimes is good, Maureen, who's not good at all. Maureen
Lou Henry should be great, right?
She is.
She should be great.
Last night, she did not do well on Monday night. She was doing the tango, and she kind of lost control. Her head just kind of bobbled around, and then her shoulders went down. Yeah, she just kind of had a couple of moments. But for, you know, she's in her 60s. She dances phenomenal.
Mary Lou Henner is in her 60s,
she's got awesome flexibility, too, by the way.
Of course she does.
She really does. Of course. Mm-hmm. But her face does not.
She's
had a lot of work done.
What?
She's had a lot of work, and it's crooked or something. There's something weird going on.
That's not good. That's not good when you get the work done, and it turns out
there's snarky something not good. But she's dancing very well. You know, like anybody could go next. Ryan Lochte is not good. Vanilla is having issues.
Vanilla.
Yeah. Kelvin Johnson.
You're on a first flavor basis.
Well, yeah. Well, so is Len Goodman. You know, he calls him the Thriller from Vanilla.
Now, did I hear that Len is going to be off the show for several weeks?
Len's going back to Europe. And
what's the deal? Is he okay?
He has to work on the other show. The other dancing show. So I'm not sure who's filling in. But last night, Kim Johnson stepped in for Erin Andrews. And I loved her. Huh. Yeah, Erin, it was just, she's getting kind of annoying. And I don't know what was going on with her, why she was gone. Maybe it must have been a sports event. Was there something big going on in sports, Dave? Because she was gone.
And, well, there's always stuff going on in sports, but
I don't know. I don't know. They never really said why she was absentee. But Kim Johnson, the one married to the Shark Man, Herjavec, you know, the shark on Shark Tank. Shark Tank.
Shark
yes.
Tank. Dude.
The nice shark.
The night shark.
The nice.
Or not Sharknado.
The nice shark.
Yes, the nice shark man. Yeah. Anyway, they're married and she filled in. She did great.
Rick Perry gone.
Yes.
So he can spend time campaigning for his friend Donald Trump now.
Yeah, he can. And I think he was really upset too.
Did he finally endorse Donald Trump?
I don't know.
I can't remember the.
I don't think he did.
There were so many who were one time competitors of his that some came back to endorse and some just have been quiet. I think he said that he was.
I think he might have, and I'm not sure. During the show, they had a Hillary and Donald dancers in masks do a dance, which was really scary.
Stop the madness.
It was really scary.
Stop.
It was right before the debate on Monday night.
The madness.
Yeah.
All right, we're going to take a break, update your news, and coming up, Karen Conti joins us, and we'll talk about some big legal issues. Review of last night's Hamilton, also in the next half hour. It's the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
Please rise. Court is now in session.
Dean Richards in on the Steve Cochran Show today. Normally you hear me Sunday mornings here on WGN Radio. See me on the WGN TV Morning News Monday through Friday, which we're going to be joining in a little while. Like the joining of the space shuttle with the command module, where we bring, you know, the radio will crash into TV, hopefully seamlessly. We'll talk with Larry Potash and Robin Baumgarten, but also I'll do my regular entertainment segment, including today a live review of last night's premiere performance, first performance in Chicago of Hamilton. The musical. The second block of tickets went on sale yesterday. I never got any official word that it was sold out, so I can only assume that tickets must still be available for that. All that information is on BroadwayInChicago.com. But we want to check in with our pal Karen Conti, who you hear Sunday nights from 8 until 9 here on WGN on Brian Noonan's show, talking about all things legal. Karen, good morning to you. How are you this morning?
Good morning, Dean. I'm great. Thank you very much.
My first question is, can we sue presidential candidates for being big fat liars?
We would all be very, very busy and wealthy as lawyers if that were the case, right?
Seems like if you lie in a public place like that, and for something so important, that we should be able, we, the citizens, should be able to file a class action lawsuit.
You know, it's gotten to the point where, you know, we just don't even listen anymore. And I think what people are doing is that they're just watching the picture and not listening to the content and looking what people look like and how they appear. And that's so dangerous to do. So dangerous.
Yeah, absolutely. Sadly, that's very true. I think we're all kind of anesthetized to it all, and we're not even paying attention, which we really should be.
We should be.
One of the stories that I've been so fascinated about, and it's disturbing, were employees of Wells Fargo Bank who were siphoning off money from clients, creating cut from customers and creating new accounts. Here's some place where a class action lawsuit seems like it would be appropriate. People who trusted this bank and put their money in the bank, and their money was being siphoned off into accounts, fake accounts that were being set up by mischievous employees.
Right. And, you know, frankly, this is not the first time this has happened with banks, by the way. And this is a good shout out to everybody. Look at your bank statements. Look at your fees. What are you being charged for? I know it's boring, and I know that it's difficult to read sometimes and to understand, but this was going on for years and years, and the employees were actually calling fraud hotlines and saying, listen, we're being encouraged to open up accounts for people who didn't authorize the opening of accounts. I mean, how much more fraudulent is that? And what's worse is that Wells Fargo gave great incentives. In fact, if they didn't meet their quotas, sometimes 10 accounts a day, 10 new accounts a day was their quota, they would be fired. So they were not only giving encouragement, they were basically saying, if you don't commit fraud, we're going to fire you. And a lot of people wanted to keep their jobs, and they did just that. So this is a very disturbing thing. I agree. I think the magnitude of this is staggering. I know that people have been fired. The CEO is going to have to give back $41 million. I mean, these are people who are making $60, $70, $80 million a year in bonuses and pay. I mean, the amount of money they're making is staggering. This whole thing is just ripe for lawsuits, and we've seen a bunch of them already.
Do you expect that there will be something like that coming with this?
Yeah, I mean, there have been already. The shareholders have brought a class action suit saying, basically, you didn't tell us that you were doing this and that your numbers were fraudulent. So that suit's on file. The interesting one, Dean, that was just filed was the people who were fired from the workers fired said, listen, you fired the people who did the bad things. We get that. But we didn't do the bad things, and we got fired too. They did a roundup of everybody and, I guess, fired about 5,100 employees. And they're saying, we had no right to fire us. We were the ones who were following the law. And this is basically a whistleblower case. So that just got filed in California. So that's going to be another headache for them for years to come.
Another thing that I've been kind of curious about, you know, we hear all these stories about shootings. The most recent, I guess, that's gotten the most attention was in Charlotte, North Carolina, and which is an open carry state. Does that change kind of the argument about open carry? If somebody is holding a gun because they are entitled to hold a gun, and they're shot because of that, does that change the dynamic whatsoever in states where concealed carry is legal?
Right. Yeah, it's interesting. And what I guess I didn't know until I did the research is that all but six states have open carry laws, Illinois being one of them. We don't have that. So in Illinois, it would be simple. If someone were walking down Michigan Avenue with a gun in his hand, okay, I had a side even, that would be cause for a police officer to arrest a police officer to believe maybe that that person was in danger to him, to the police officer himself or the public. So, but the flash ahead to North Carolina, where you don't even need a license to open carry. Okay, you can walk down the street with a gun in your hand, a gun in your holster. So that does change the analysis. So if a cop sees a guy with a gun in his hand, that doesn't make him unreasonably dangerous as a matter of law. That makes him just complying with the law. The issue is, if he's smoking a joint, does that make him dangerous? If he's not obeying police directives, does that make him dangerous? I think the combination of those things could lead a police officer to say, yes, this guy is dangerous. But we can't just assume because he's got a gun. And I think some of the commentators are saying, oh, look, he had a gun. He had a gun in his hand. That doesn't mean anything. That's totally illegal in North Carolina. So, again, unless we're going to change gun laws, that's a right that people have in most of our states.
Yeah, open carry versus concealed carry. But the dynamic, though, of what that means when law enforcement is reacting to something that they view as potentially dangerous. I'm sure you guys will get into it a lot more this coming Sunday night. Karen Conti's on with Brian Noonan every Sunday night from 8 until 9. And I always enjoy whenever I get a chance to talk with her as well. Karen, I hope you have a great day today. Thank you.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
WGN Radio is the sound of Chicago.
720 WGN.
It is 6:52. Steve Cochran Show with Dean Richards filling in today on 720 WGN. We were watching the WGN TV morning news yesterday. You know that I spent the entire morning outside Private Bank Theater. There's Larry Potash.
Hey, he's on the radio filling in for Steve Cochran this morning. So wait a minute, you didn't get tickets the opening night of Hamilton? What the heck?
Last night was the preview performance of it. They're going to do a couple of weeks of previews of Hamilton first, and then the official opening night is going to be October the 19th. You know, work a few bugs out. You kind of get used to this new theater that they're working in. That's what the whole thing's about. But on the phone line with us, though, we've got David Munar, who was at the performance last night. I got to think that, you know, they've got a lot of the bugs already worked out of this whole thing. David, are you there?
I'm here. Good morning, Dean.
Good morning. So I know you saw the show in New York with Lin-Manuel Miranda. How did the show that you saw last night compare with that?
It was strong. It was good. And for fans of the music and of are going to be happy. There were some really strong performances.
How about the was the show pretty much the same content of the show, or did they change it in any way from New York adapting to Chicago?
It's pretty faithful to the Broadway production. The stage is smaller, so I think they made some changes to the dancing, and they have a smaller group of dancers, but it's pretty faithful.
Yeah, what was the crowd like? I got to think that, you know, being the first performance here in Chicago, that you know, the enthusiasm must have been through the roof there last night.
Yeah, no, folks were really excited. I think most of us have been waiting for a long time to buy the tickets, you know, as soon as it was announced, so we're pretty excited. But it's good. They are working out some, you know, a few songs I think they could tune up a little bit, but there's also some really breakout performances. There's one of the cast members seems like is a young man in college who's performing on a musical stage for the first time, and he's amazing.
Yeah, you know, one of the performers that I'm most interested in seeing is a young man from the Chicago Academy of Art here in Chicago, Jose Ramos. He's a Chicagoan, and it's got to be pretty amazing for him to be performing in his hometown and the biggest show that it is. David, hang on for a quick second here, because on the radio we're going to get a little bit more, and we'll have more review for television coming up in just a little while as well. A couple of other quick stories to share with you in the buzz this morning. Brad Pitt skipping the premiere of a new documentary, Voyage in Time, because of the media frenzy over the split with Angelina Jolie, filed for divorce last week, seeking custody of their 6 children. Pitt released a statement last night saying this film that he's talking about that he missed, Terrence Malick's Voyage of Time, is a beautiful and unique experience for IMAX, but he said, I'm currently focused on my family situation, and I don't want to distract attention from this extraordinary film. We've got a WGN Morning News Movie Club giveaway. Everyone can enter this, TV and radio. It's the movie The Birth of a Nation, which I've seen already and is incredible. 20 lucky winners will have a chance to win 2 tickets to see a pre-screening of Birth of the Nation by going to WGNTV.com/contest. You enter your name, and we'll have a random drawing and pick those winners coming up later on. And Larry and Robin will be back in our 8 o'clock hour. We've got more reviews of Hamilton last night. I'm pretty sure everybody pretty much really, really loving it. So we'll toss it back to you guys on TV.
Forecast today, periods of rain, high of 63.
There we go. So we're all did this synced up? I think that worked okay. Sometimes these syncings can go pretty crazy.
It's very good.
David, are you still there? David Monar still on the phone? Sounds like he's not.
Hey, Dean.
Oh, there he is.
I'm here.
Yeah, there he is. What was the biggest highlight of Hamilton for you last night?
My favorite songs, I think. Just seeing them brought to stage. There's also seeing some of the good chemistry on stage when they're having a good time, and some of the big ensemble moments. And certainly some of the laughs were hitting in different places than was expected in a good way. So, yeah.
What's the attraction? I mean, you're a huge fan of this show. I asked so many people yesterday, you know, why would you stand in line for 24 hours to get tickets? Why? What is it about this show? What has it been for you about this show that is so attractive?
I think it's lots of things. I'm a history buff, so I think bringing this historical, story of a founding father to the stage is interesting. I think Lin-Manuel wrote a really interesting story that's both about politics, about history, but there's a lot of just human emotion about love and loss and regret and forgiveness. It's a really interesting genre. It's written in kind of this rap style. It's very hip hop. It's very contemporary. And then it's a multiracial cast. So these historical figures are not cast in, they're not all white, even though many of the historical figures were. So it feels very contemporary, very hip hop. The music's great, but it's telling a compelling and pretty significant story for the country. Seeing it during an election cycle is also pretty interesting.
I would guess that really has to be true. David, I appreciate you taking some time to give us the preview of the first performance of Hamilton at the Private Bank Theater last night. We'll have more coming up a little bit later on in the show. David, thank you for joining us. Have a great day today. Thanks a lot. 6:59, we'll take a quick break and update your early morning news. Dean Richards in on Steve Cochran show today. I like Class the Joint up a little bit with this cool Magnificent Seven music. From the original Magnificent Seven. That's when a Western was a Western. I actually like the new Magnificent Seven. I gave it a Dean's List B+. I think most people are coming out of it and telling me that they like it quite a bit. You guys seen it? Mary's always too busy with Dancing with the Stars.
I have not seen it yet, and I really do. Who are the women in it?
There is a young. Really, there's only one primary actress in it.
I was going to say, is there a number 8?
Right. Right. Halle Bennett.
Oh.
Young actress. It's a small role in the film, but... Yeah.
Is it a guy movie, really?
I think with Halle Bennett in it, they're trying to broaden the appeal of it more than just a guy movie.
I mean, I'm kind of excited about it. I'm not extremely.
Are you a Western fan?
I kind of am.
Yeah.
But this one, I don't know.
How about you, Dave? Are you a fan of the old Western?
Oh, sure. Absolutely.
This one's just great. Well, I think popcorn fun. A lot of critics, reviewed this movie, comparing it to the other Magnificent Seven, which I don't think is a fair comparison.
Then they should have changed the name.
Well, maybe. I mean, it's kind of based on the same thing, but I don't think you review one movie comparing it to another movie. Every movie should stand on its own. Or Seven Samurai, on which the original Magnificent Seven was based. This one's all on its own, and it's just, big old, good old-fashioned Western popcorn fun. Going to it with that kind of mindset, I think you'll really enjoy it. And Denzel Washington is great in it. Chris Pratt is great in it. Ethan Hawke reunited with Denzel Washington, as you recall, He co-starred with him in Training Day several years ago. And at the Toronto Film Festival a couple of weeks ago, we sat down with the whole cast, including a pretty nice conversation that we had with Ethan Hawke.
It's an old-fashioned Hollywood Western. It's the opportunity doesn't arrive with a genuine Hollywood movie star at the center of it. You know what I mean? Who needs
I like
John
how you
Wayne
act like you're not to, like you're not one of them that's
but,
part
but
of
Denzel
it.
Denzel Washington is you know what I mean? He's in that rarefied air that can really, you know, he's in that Gary Cooper world, you know?
Any apprehension whatsoever when they come to you and say we're remaking one of the greatest movies of all time?
No, because I love that movie, but it needs to be rebooted. You know, I mean, if you think like that, you know, once Laurence Olivier does Hamlet, nobody gets to do Hamlet again. Mm-hmm. Yeah, if the story's worth telling, it's worth telling again. And let's face it, there's a lot of antiquated stuff in that movie. I mean, you know, there's a white guy dressed as a Mexican talking in a very bad accent, like he's a bad guy. You know, there's a lot of stuff about it that's not real, and it's nobody sweats. There's a lot of, like, it's enjoyable, but it's fake. You know, it's that very, you know, it's of that moment.
Yeah. One of the things that I really liked about this, you mentioned the white guy playing a Mexican, is how diverse this movie is, yet nobody makes a big deal out of it whatsoever.
There's only one line spoken about it all, and it's your line, just navigating the white man's prejudices. One line about it.
Yeah.
But there's no hateful language in it. It's just, there's no... Nothing about it at all.
Straightaway Western. Mm-hmm. Straightaway good old-fashioned Western. Mm-hmm. What kind of special skills? I mean, everybody I know had to go through some cowboy training, but I would think that you especially had to go through some training so you didn't kill anybody.
Yeah, I need to train a lot with the knives. And I brought some Korean friend who's a very amazing action coordinator. So he flew from Korea to Baton Rouge. And he stayed there like 4 days, and we made the choreography, and we trained together.
Everybody pretty saddle sore at the end of this whole thing?
It was so much by the end we weren't sore anymore. We were calloused.
Yeah. Ethan Hawke, along with his co-star there, we heard a little bit of Byung-Hun Lee, who plays Billy Rocks in the movie. He's the Asian star in the film. By the way, one of the biggest stars of Asian cinema in the world, who has the role, if you've seen the movie already, he's the guy that throwing the knives and the samurai swords, and he's the bladesman in the movie and does quite an amazing job. What I want to do is just open up the phones for a minute, because what has been most fun talking about this movie with people are their favorite Westerns of all time. I loved the original Magnificent Seven. Maybe it's, you know, just a fond part of my youth, you know, came out in 1960, you know, and watching those movies. I used to love the old Clint Eastwood spaghetti Westerns. Those were among my favorites. The Clint Eastwood movie Unforgiven is one of my favorite Westerns of all time. How about you? Favorite Westerns of all time? 312-981-7200. We'll get to that in a quick second.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
I don't deserve this. To die like this. I was building a house.
Deserves got nothing to do with it.
I'll see you in hell with your money.
When you have to shoot, shoot, don't talk.
Every gun makes its own tune.
I'm going into the hills for the winter. Where am I going to get the food for my men?
Buy it or grow it.
Or maybe even work for it.
Somehow I don't think you solved my problems.
We deal in lead, friend.
Solving your problems isn't that hard.
Oh, man, I love good old-fashioned Westerns. Partner. Badges. We don't need no stinking badges. Favorite Westerns of all time with the number one movie in America right now, the new Magnificent Seven. Let's see what some of you think about this. Matthew is in Downers Grove. Good morning, Matthew. You're on WGN.
Morning, Dean. How are you?
Howdy, partner.
You.
What's your favorite Western, my friend?
Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid.
Love that movie.
Mm-hmm.
Love that one. Saw it at Ford City Theater. Isn't that funny how you remember certain things as a kid? Such a big deal to go to. I think it was like fairly newly opened Ford City. It was a big deal.
That was a big deal movie, and it was the biggest movie that year. So,
oh, kidding me? Paul Newman, Robert Redford jumping off that cliff into the water.
Yeah. Oh yeah,
one of the greatest of all time. Couldn't agree more. Thanks, Matthew. Have a great day, Ralph, in Bloomington, Bloomingdale. You're on WGN. Good morning.
Morning, Dean. It's tough for me. I've got two that have always been equally great, in my opinion. The first one was The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance.
Oh yeah.
John Wayne, Lee Marvin, Jimmy Stewart. I mean, how do you go wrong
with a cast like that? You kidding me?
You
had me at John Wayne.
Yeah, yeah. And then my second one is Once Upon a Time in the West. The one with Charles Bronson, Henry Fonda, where they're building the railroad. Not only that, but the soundtrack from that movie is amazing also. I love that movie. And it's a long movie. It's like a three-hour movie.
Yeah, they don't make them like that anymore, some of these great old westerns. 1968 on that Once Upon a Time in the West, another good one. Thanks for the call, Ralph. Appreciate that. David in Grays Lake. Hi, you're on WGN.
Good morning. The previous caller mentioned Lee Marvin. I loved him in Cat Ballou. Best Supporting Actor for that. But my favorite is Big Country with Gregory Peck, Charlton Heston, Gene Simmons, Burl Ives, of all people.
Burl Ives. The Snowman and Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer.
And it was a long movie, and they had one of those intermission scenes.
Right.
Where, you know, it took 20 minutes in between the first and the second acts, but really, just wonderful acting and a true Western spirit.
Why do you think we love Western so much?
Well, it takes us back to days gone by. The phone on the wall that you had to pick up the receiver and talk to an operator to make the call.
Give it a crank, talk to Sarah to hook you up to somebody else, right? Yeah, maybe it's part of the Americana. Maybe it's part of that, you know, American pioneer spirit that we go back. There's just something that's so attractive about those movies to me.
Oh, yeah. Well, thank you very much. This is a great topic.
Appreciate your call, David. Thank you very much. Back to Bloomingdale. This time it's Andy. Hi, you're on WGN.
Well, the guys actually mentioned my first two one, but he also forgot one of the favorite actors that was in The Big Country. Is Chuck Connors.
Oh, yeah.
What? From the Cubs, actually.
That's right. He was a Chicago Cub and a rifleman also at the same time.
But I want to say since that, but probably the bloodiest Western I think I ever saw was, I don't know if you ever saw The Wild Bunch.
I haven't seen it in 100 years, but yeah.
William Holden, Ernest Borgnine, Robert Ryan, Warren Oates. It was just a great movie. White, one of the bloodiest movies I think I've ever seen as far as a Western goes.
Yeah, did you see Django Unchained, the Quentin Tarantino film? And that's probably the bloodiest Western I think I've ever seen. And like intentionally, you know, it's Quentin Tarantino, so the more blood, the messier, the better, as far as he's concerned.
The same thing with this movie. The very final scene is like they go up against about 150 guys, about five guys go up against 150.
Yeah,
so it was pretty crazy. But if anybody has a chance to ever check out, check it out. They may really enjoy it.
Good choice, Andy. Thank you very much. Let's get one more in here before we get a news update. Tom, you are on WGN. Good morning.
Oh, my gosh. My head's spinning from all the choices. It's hard to narrow it down to one, but I'd probably go with The Searchers. John Wayne, Ward Bond, Jeffrey Hunter.
Yeah, there's some awesome ones, really. If you go down the list. I started during the break. I started just writing some down, and then you just can't stop writing them down once you do.
Right. I don't know if you ever saw the miniseries Lonesome Dove. Up there.
Yeah, we haven't even talked about TV westerns. You know, the Gunsmokes, the Have Gun Will Travel, the Rawhides.
Oh, just a series alone too. Memorable
Wyatt Earp. Wyatt Earp.
Manderson. Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely, and. Can I just bring up, I don't know if it's my favorite Western, but the 12-year-old boy and me? Come on, Blazing Saddles?
Okay.
Come on, Blazing Saddles, seriously? Do I have to play some audio from the campfire scene?
No. And what about Shane?
Oh, Shane. Shane.
Just love saying that kid's
love
name.
Love Westerns. Love the Westerns. Tom, have a great day today. Thank you for listening. We appreciate it. 729, we're going to update news next on WGN.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
With Dean Richards filling in today. Just another bald guy sitting in the chair. I think that may have been Vic Vaughn's confusion. So this is the first time I've ever been confused for Steve. Yesterday when I was out in front of the Private Bank Theater, you know, we're doing live reports while people were standing in line for Hamilton. I was mistaken for Tom Skilling five times.
Okay.
Because Tom Skilling would certainly be out in front of the Private Bank Theater reporting for WGN-TV.
But he would be in front of a camera.
Yeah, and if the weather was bad.
I can understand that.
Yeah, could be out there.
Maybe.
Are you guys even the same height?
I think I'm a little taller than Tom. I believe I'm a little taller than Tom.
But you've gotten that before.
I get Tom Skilling all the time.
And Billy Joel.
And honestly, I can see how people get, you know, they recognize a face from television. And who's the most famous face on television? T. Skilling, of course.
You mean aside from
Definitely.
You?
As I say, if you're going to put bald guys from Channel 9, I'm going to say Tom Skilling, Bozo. I might be like 10th or 11th on the list, somewhere down there someplace.
Paul.
But I got, Paul, we've got it now. Yeah. Now, these days, we've got a lot of Paul Conrad, a lot of bald guys on. And I got four or five Tom Skillings, two Billy Joels.
Two Billy Joels.
Yeah.
Okay.
Ooh. Yeah, Billy Joel is standing out in front of the Private Bank Theater interviewing people. He broke from his concert tour for a minute.
He is uptown.
He's a New Yorker like Hamilton and all that. What's up here, Mary?
My husband is in television as well. Pat Boyle, Comcast
Sportsnet. Yeah,
he does the Blackhawk games pre and post, and he's been on NBC5, their partner stations, but. Constantly people come up to us and they know his name, but they say that they're like, oh, they introduce him to his kids. This is Pat Boyle. He does the weather on NBC. and then we've had some drunk people come up to him and say, you're the worst weather reporter ever.
Oh,
you
nice.
Never have the storms correct, but he doesn't do weather.
Doesn't do
he
the
does
weather.
Sports.
And, yeah.
But they have his name right, so they know the guy, but they get him wrong all the time. It's amusing.
Yeah, people are, I think, mostly well-intentioned. I don't know how well-intentioned it is when somebody says you get the forecast wrong all the time. That's not very friendly.
No.
But yeah, people are they're so very well-intentioned when they
are they, though, Dean? Are they?
I think so. Do you get recognized, Dave? You're on Channel 9 a lot.
Yeah, I do. But I also get the how do you respond to this? When you meet someone and you mention or they ask you, what do you do? Do television for WGN, radio for WGN. They say, oh, I don't listen or watch you. So my response is, and what do you do? Oh, I have an auto repair service. Oh, well, I don't bring my car there.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. I don't like what you do either.
You're a dentist. I'm not a patient.
I wouldn't let you put your fingers in my mouth.
And a lot of people do say that. They have that defensive.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's like, why do you ask me then if you're just going to shoot it right back in my face?
Sometimes people will say something about how you look. And I guess, you know, the expectation is different. I guess you do look a little different in person than you do on camera, but people will say you're taller, you're shorter, you're skinnier, you're fatter, whatever it happens to be. And the best response to that I've ever heard has come from the morning news's Pat Tomasulo, who is, he will say he's short. He's a little on the short side. And he said, if you're going to tell me that I'm shorter than I look on television, I'm going to point out some physical thing with you.
Right. Good one.
I'm also going to say something about yours. So think twice before you say anything to me again.
Do you ever get recognized in a restroom?
I have.
That's a little, that can be a little
awkward. I have had, again.
For guys, it's more awkward.
Very well-intentioned. Mm-hmm. You know, people are very, very nice.
No question.
But when you're standing at the urinal, there should be no urinal talk anyway.
Right.
That's man code. You don't talk at the urinal.
Even with the buffers.
Even with the walls. Right. But, you know, I'm standing there once and someone says, hey, Dean Richards from the Morning News.
Oh, this is why I'm shy with that. This is why I have to go in the stall.
Yeah. Do people don't mistake you for me at the urinal?
No, it's just like, but this is why. It's like, okay.
There are, there's two, right.
There's a line, right?
Like, oh, I love you on the morning. Oh, thanks. Yeah, thanks. You're trying, yeah. Like, you're trying to concentrate and finish. Mm-hmm. Can I get your autograph? Ew. A little busy right at the moment.
Do you want me? I won't wash my hands.
Little busy at the moment. I'll meet you outside the men's room.
I recently got the, hey, you're the sports guy.
yeah, and?
Okay.
Yeah. That's just, you know, for those of you going into your day today, you see somebody from television in a restroom, probably not a good time to say anything.
I'm not sure what it is about you, Dean, but I believe the last time you filled in, we got stuck on urinal cake talk.
We did.
Yes, we did.
Now, now we're back to the bathroom.
I'm if you've listened to my Sunday show, you know we do a segment every Sunday morning, urinal talk. It's been a big favorite here on WGN for decades. So we'll move off the topic.
Sorry, I took you down that road.
You did take me down.
My mistake.
Yeah, you were Hillary Clinton. I was Donald Trump. I just took the bait completely and ran with it. Speaking of the D. Trump man, he's going to be in the Chicago area today. We're going to talk about that.
Maybe he doesn't want the American people, all of you watching tonight, to know that he's paid nothing in federal taxes, because the only years that anybody's ever seen were a couple of years when he had to turn them over to state authorities when he was trying to get a casino license, and they showed he didn't pay any federal income tax. So
that makes
if
me
he's
smart.
Paid...
More debate talk? A little bit. Tiny bit. Seems like the whole debate topic was pretty much talked out yesterday. So many interesting points of view. As I was running errands and things yesterday, listening to Bill and Wendy and the different shows on WGN all talking about this yesterday, you know that we've got the Donald in the Chicago area today. He's going to be in Bolingbrook today doing an appearance at the Bolingbrook Golf Club. Tickets range $1,000 to $250,000, according to a report from the Tribune. You guys want to go? Morning show outing?
You know,
I know
Steve takes you on, you know, lunch and breakfast and stuff like that. Let's all go see Donald Trump.
I actually believe that Steve was golfing at Bolingbrook on Monday.
Really?
So wouldn't it be odd if he and Trump bumped into each other there?
Wound up. Mind if I play through? Wrong. I'm going to play through. Four? Wrong. there's going to be a lot of activity out in that area today. There's also going to be an anti-Trump protest. Suburban Families Against Hate is what they're called, from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. Also at the Bolingbrook Golf Club, so be aware of all of that. This is the only thing. I'm purposely kind of staying away from the debate today because I think everyone kind of... you know, everyone's got an opinion. Who you thought won, who you thought failed, who you thought did this, who you thought did that. Pretty much all talked out yesterday. But this is one of my takes on the debate, without getting into who won and who lost, how fascinating it is how we all watch the same thing and how many different perceptions of reality there were. People, you know, seeing exactly the same thing and interpreting it a different way. That's fascinating to me. We need to get a team of, sociologists or psychologists or, you know, something like that to figure out how that happens to be. This may be one of the more interesting interpretations of part of the debate that comes from San Francisco 49ers backup quarterback Colin Kaepernick, the most famous kneeling person in America right now.
And also probably the most famous guy who never plays. I think he's been in one game so far this
year. That's kind of fascinating to me as well, is his gesture of not standing during the national anthem. Mm-hmm. That's become part of the national debate. That's a whole other subject, which... I also find very interesting right now. I'm a big believer of you stand out of respect for the national anthem, right. Even if you've got problems. We all have problems with things that are going on in America. We all disagree with things that are going on in America. The fact that we can disagree with things that are going on in America is why you should stand during the national anthem, because what that song represents gives us the freedom to disagree and to protest and all like that. But I just think it's disrespectful. I get what he's trying to say. I get the point that he's trying to make. I just think that's the wrong way to do it. But anyway, back to the debate, because when we want political analysis, we turn to Colin Kaepernick, who tweeted last night, or this, I guess, would be Monday night. It says, "I'm watching the debates. Neither one of you gives a damn about black folks. They both sound uncomfortable talking about black issues." Now, maybe it's because I'm a white guy. I don't know how he reaches that conclusion. They both talked about problems in the city. They both have their perspectives on it that are pretty different. But I think they both acknowledge that there are problems, that there needs to be something done to protect people where there may be cases of abuse against them. But also there needs to be respect for the police. And they talked about both sides of the issue. He said it was embarrassing watching our two candidates. They're both proven liars. It almost seems like they're trying to debate who's less racist. Did anybody get that? I didn't get that perception whatsoever.
I think his observation that they seemed uncomfortable. Well, there were many times in the debate where you could take a comment or observe a short segment of the debate and say, yeah, they seem kind of uncomfortable with that. That's sort of the eye of the beholder. I think that maybe he was looking for some discomfort.
Well, yeah. I think that's exactly what, you know, if you go looking for, I don't want to say trouble exactly, but if you go looking for something like that, I guess you're going to find it. I try to look at what people say and hear what people say, even if I disagree with what they say, and say, I disagree with you, but I get it. I get what you're trying to say.
Right.
I don't even get this. I never got the point where it seemed like they were trying to, what was this quote? Trying to be less racist. I didn't get that. I didn't get that there was a discomfort about talking about black issues. They presented how they felt about it. So maybe it's time for Colin Kaepernick to maybe should concentrate a little more on his football skills, spend a little more time with that, and maybe a little less of trying to be a national political pundit.
Well, he's put himself out there. Hey, starting with the sitting during the anthem is how it began. Then it moved to kneeling. But now he's offering his opinion on pretty much everything.
Yeah, I guess it becomes a little bit addictive once you get that kind of...
people are paying attention to what he says.
Attention. You know what's most disturbing to me about the kneeling thing? That I'm seeing students doing it now. I'm seeing, you know, little kids, grade school, high school, even college, but mostly grade school and high school. Very disturbing to me that, they are upset at things that are going on in America, but... I think students especially need to be taught respect for America and what the song represents in the first place that gives them the right to peacefully protest. That's what we have in America.
There are some other disturbing aspects to it. At Saturday night at Northwestern, Jim Cornelison was singing the national anthem, and three Nebraska players right in front of where Jim was facing the west side of the stadium kneeled during the anthem. Mm. One of those players said on Monday that he received death threats when he got back to Nebraska. And that's totally wrong as well.
Right.
I mean, it's like...
Yeah, we have the right to...
They have the right to do it.
Part of being an American is the right to protest. I just think there's a better way to do it than disrespecting the song that represents why you have that freedom to protest. You should be happy for that song. That's what gives you the right to peacefully protest. Dean Richards in for Steve Cochran all morning. That entertainment guy that we normally talk to in the 8 o'clock hour. We're not letting him on today. We've got more important things to get to today, including talking with WGN color analyst Troy Murray, joining us on the phone line this hour of the Steve Cochran Show, by the way, sponsored by Wintrust Community Banks. Troy, good morning to you, my friend. How are you?
Morning, Dean. I'm doing well. I'm doing great.
I was hosting a question and answer at the Museum of Broadcast Communication last night with Tom Dreesen and Jay Blunk, a gentleman that I know both you and Dave know very well, Chicago Blackhawks. He was there, presented Tom Dreesen with a sweater, an official Blackhawks sweater. Really very, very nice gesture for our pal Tom Dreesen.
He's a funny man, isn't he?
You know what? He was, I got to say, we had a nice conversation, a nice Q&A, and then we took questions from the audience where Tom really got to just be Tom Dreesen, and he was hilarious. It's like old school stand-up.
I know. He
really,
is
like very Rat Packy, you know, with all those years with Sinatra and Sammy Dean
he's
Martin.
He's got some fantastic stories, doesn't he, Dean?
He really does. He really does. Growing up in Chicago and all that he's been through, he told some stories of how, you know, working with Sammy Davis Jr. and like some of the greats, and of course, 14 years with Sinatra, pretty amazing.
Yeah, but just incredible stories.
Yeah, and he's going to look good in that sweater too. I know that. We're going to be seeing a lot of those sweaters tonight. The first preseason game is tonight. What we have of the Blackhawks taking on what we have of the Pittsburgh Penguins, the Stanley Cup champions, right, Dave? Because like
a lot of guys are either they're out of the World Cup of Hockey or they're making their way back from Toronto. And some of the guys, the Team Canada, Team Europe, are still playing. So that means for the Blackhawks, Jonathan Toews, Corey Crawford, Marian Hossa. You've got the other guys who were eliminated over the weekend who haven't yet joined the team. So, Troy, this is one of those nights where you're going to need a scorecard.
Well, it is, Dave. And, you know, it's funny because we kind of found a tentative lineup yesterday. And going into the game tonight against the Pittsburgh Penguins, I had to do a lot of research on some of the background of some of the guys who were playing in this game tonight. And, you know, normally when you're talking about the Toews and Canes of the Blackhawks, it's a no-brainer what you got to say. But, you know, they've got some good young players that are going to be in the lineup tonight, and obviously a great opportunity for them playing in this game tonight without some of the star players that the Blackhawks will have during the regular season. So a tremendous opportunity, actually an opportunity that these guys are very lucky to have this year. And there's spots open on this team this year. There's no question that the Blackhawks lost a lot of players last year again after losing to the St. Louis Blues in the first round. And there's some young players that are going to have an opportunity. There's spots that are open and have to be filled.
Our conversation with Troy, by the way, brought to you by Chicago's own Nuveen. Alexander Fortin, Troy, is a guy that the Blackhawks signed to a three-year contract over the weekend, just 19 years old. Everybody who has seen this kid is really impressed by him.
Well, he was passed over in the draft a couple years, and sometimes he's only 19 years old and he was passed up in the draft two years, which means you're drafting these kids 17 and 18 years of age, and some kids don't mature or they don't, you know, they don't grow into their bodies quite, you know, as quickly as other players do. And when you're drafting the young players, sometimes it's kind of a crapshoot because they stop growing, and then all of a sudden at 22, there's another kid that wasn't very big and now he's, you know, matured quite well. So you look at 14 and, you know, for 19 years of age, his team went to the Memorial Cup, which is the championship the tournament that they have up in Canada for the Junior Hockey League, and did extremely well. He's not a flashy player, but very solid player, and the Blackhawks have really liked what they've seen out of this kid. And good for him to come into training camp, and he played in Traverse City, which was a prospects tournament that they had in Michigan. Prior to the training camp, he excelled and he played extremely well. And it's something that you got to pat the kid on the back for earning an opportunity within the Blackhawks organization, earning his three-year contract.
Who are some of the other young guys to be watching tonight? Hinostroza, Hartman, guys like that?
Yeah, Vinny Hinostroza has been one of the best players in camp so far. And you know, again, he's not a big guy, but he's a local product, 5'9". 175, 180 pounds, but every time that he's out on the ice, he makes something happen. He's got great speed. He had 18 goals last year
in Rockford, had a few games with the Blackhawks, 7 last year. And, expect good things. He's a guy that is going to push for a spot. Ryan Hartman, a little bit older now, a couple years under his belt in Rockford, 22 years of age. You know, he's a gritty guy. He's the guy that you look like when you're trying to replace an Andrew Shaw. He plays with a lot of grit. Last year, he had over 100 penalty minutes in Rockford. You got to play right on that edge. A couple other guys that the Blackhawks are really high on: Nick Smaltz out of the University of North Dakota, national champions last year in the NCAA tournament. Tyler Mott had a tremendous season at the University of Michigan. He came up and played a few games for Rockford at the end of last year. You know, these young guys have an opportunity. And Stan Bowman addressed the media yesterday. And, you know, when they said, you know, what are you looking at as far as guys coming up? He said, well, we're not picking the team today. And that was a really good point, because these guys are going to have an opportunity in the 6 preseason games, the training camp practices and stuff, to show the coaching staff what they can do at this level. And one of them, or a couple of them, are going to have to step up. And it's kind of up to them to see, you know, where their maturity level is at and whether they're ready to play or not. But they've got some great talent. And, you know, for the Blackhawks, they're looking to fill that depth area role around some of the key players that they have under contract.
So the game tonight will be at 7:30. Our pregame here on WGN with Judd Surratt will be at 7. But you can join Troy and John Weideman tonight with all the action starting at 7:30 tonight. My question, Troy, is what's it like to sit next to John during these games? You know, maybe one of the most enthusiastic play-by-play guys in sports, period. Do you sometimes fear for your life? Are you in more fear than when you were actually on the ice?
I'm not scared, and I'm really not in fear, but I will tell you I am impressed. You know, the thing about doing the broadcast, the play-by-play, especially on the radio side of it, is you have to paint a picture. And John Weideman, in my opinion, and I listen to the other broadcasters and, you know, around the National Hockey League on the radio side of it, his call of the game is second to none. And he's a true profession. He loves to come to the rink. It's his passion. And it really comes through in the broadcast. I mean, he doesn't miss a beat. And if you guys are sitting there, Dean and Dave, and the fans, you know, driving around in the car, sitting at home, you know exactly where the puck is. You know exactly what's going on. It's amazing. And I'd sit right next to him, and I got the headset on, and I'm watching the game from the United Center or wherever we are on the road. And he's telling me what I'm watching.
See, I would just be afraid sitting next to him that his head might explode.
Well, he does get a little bit excited.
Do you wear a poncho? Do you wear rain gear just in case? If nothing else, just for saliva.
Away from him, then I'm not getting anything on.
hey, Troy, real quick, how slowly are the Blackhawks going to bring Duncan Keith around?
You know, that's kind of up to him and the medical staff. He's had some really good practices. He actually wanted to come out and do another practice the other day, and the coaching staff said, no, we're not going to do that. So I think he's feeling really good about where he's at right now. He's not going to play in probably the first 4 playoff games. The Blackhawks have preseason games. They have 4 up until Sunday, 4 and 5 days. And then we got a week of practices. The rest of the players will be back from the World Cup. And I would expect a pretty solid roster for the last 2 games. And I would expect Duncan Keith would be playing at least 1, if not both of those, before the regular season. Seems like he's on track to start the season.
Troy, always good to hear your voice. We'll look forward to hearing it tonight here on WGN Radio. The Blackhawks and the Penguins tonight. So what's the deal now with the Blackhawks on WGN? Their first preseason game will be Friday, so, right?
On WGN-TV, they'll be on Friday.
All right. Mm-hmm. So if people wanted to see the Blackhawks game tonight, why would you when you can listen to it on WGN Radio, all the games? That's CSN tonight.
That is Comcast SportsNet.
Comcast SportsNet tonight. White Sox on WGN tonight?
White Sox on WGN-TV and the Cubs on WGN-TV tomorrow. And then the Blackhawks on Friday. It's pretty good.
Pretty exciting stuff.
Yeah.
How about the excitement level? I mean, you must feel it more tangibly than most people of just, you know, like the beginning of the playoff run for the Cubs. Amazingly thrilling.
And, you know, we're still, what are we, over a week away from the first playoff game. It'll be a week from Friday. So...
the buildup between now and then is going to be through the roof. I mean, it's really been going all season, Dean. I don't think there's ever been a year where you've sort of sensed that noise in the background that it's coming, and it's the drum beats are getting louder.
Yeah.
And here we are now just days away.
Yeah. I think people around the country are like finally getting where they were aware that the Cubs were having an amazing season this year, you know, best season, best team in baseball, all that. But now people, as I talk to people around the country, you know, they're getting the Cubs fever also. And as we've heard for so long, you know, people will say, well, I'm a Dodgers fan, but if the Cubs get in it, I got to root for the Cubs.
Right.
You guys, you're due for it. I'm hearing that from every place around the country now.
Yeah, I mean, I think you see it wherever the Cubs play, which it's always that way, where they always seem to have a home field wherever they are. But, I mean, this week in Pittsburgh even, and the Pirates were technically alive. They were mathematically alive for a playoff spot up until late last night. And still you've got tons of Cubs fans who went to PNC Park, and they close out the season in Cincinnati this weekend. That's always a real hotbed of Cubs fans. They always make the trip to the Great American Ballpark. So I mean, it's just going to be nuts here for the next few weeks.
It's going to be amazing. And I still have the feeling I don't want to get too excited. I feel like I'll jinx it.
You know, a lot of people are
personally,
that way.
It's like, I can't get too excited yet. Because of years past.
Well, Ryan Dempster, who's with us every Thursday morning, has been one of those who's been saying, this is just dumb. People who are afraid they're going to somehow jinx him, or just enjoy it. And that's the thing. You got to enjoy a season like this because they, as we know, they don't come around often.
What did Brickhouse used to say? It could happen to any team.
Yeah,
any team could have a bad century. Yes. Right, exactly. Quick break, and then we're going to talk about one of the top stories in the world this morning, the death of former Israeli Prime Minister Shimon Peres. We'll talk live to Jerusalem coming up on WGN.
This is the Steve Cochran Show, live from the Allstate Showcase Studio.
WGN Chicago.
720 WGN.
Steve is out for the rest of the week. Dean Richards in today. I believe it will be the Dave and Andrea Show. Andrea back from Greece tomorrow morning. You guys will be hosting tomorrow morning, correct?
We call it DNA, Dave and Andrea.
Very, very nice. Very nice. And then Justin Kaufman filling in on Friday. So nice little combo platter of different people. That's how many people it takes to fill the shoes of a Steve Cochran.
That's 1, 2, 3. Four. Yeah, that's a lot.
It's a lot of feet.
Big shoes.
That's right. The big story that we've been reporting all morning long, the death of former Israeli Prime Minister Shimon Peres, a reaction from around the world, but very expected and interesting reaction coming from Israel. That's where Jordana Miller is with ABC News. Jordana, thank you so much for joining us this morning. How do you describe just kind of the general feeling in Jerusalem where you are around the country this morning?
Hi, Dean. You know, I'm actually at the Israeli parliament right now. I just attended a few minutes ago a very solemn ceremony where they lowered the flags here to half-mast, and they already have out the kind of black little platform, raised platform, which is where they're going to put the coffin of Shimon Peres tomorrow so that, you know, the nation can come and pay their respects. And they're expecting thousands of people to pour in to the plaza in front of the Israeli parliament. The nation is really in mourning, and that's going really across the political spectrum here. Even Palestinian leaders coming out and saying this is such a loss, the loss of Shimon Peres for the region, for humanity, that he was a brave soldier for peace. And it's so interesting when we look back at the life of Shimon Peres, because there's such a transformation and some contradictions. I mean, the man who really established Israel's defense industry. He built up the army. He spearheaded secretly Israel's nuclear facility in Dimona. Later became, and by the way, the first prime minister to approve of the first Jewish settlement in the West Bank was also Shimon Peres. But later in his years, he becomes just the warrior for peace, secretly moving the Oslo Peace Accords, spearheading it by himself, bringing in Rabin later into the equation, bringing in the former President Bill Clinton in later to make it happen. So that signing that we all remember on the White House lawn. And even sticking with the process as terror and buses were blowing up after that peace deal was signed, and never really giving up.
Chicago's most...
Yes. Long, it's been a transformation, and the nation is, you know, feels like they've lost one of their fathers of the country, really.
What do you think will be the legacy of Shimon Peres?
You know, I think his legacy will really be, obviously, the vision he had for peace in Israel, peace in the region. But I think, you know, his legacy will really be this tenacity he had, this endless dedication. We keep hearing in Hebrew the same word over and over again for a kind of tirelessness, a persistence where he just wouldn't give up. And he forced people to imagine an Israel that could be at peace with its neighbors. Arafat, who was considered the number one terrorist, he turned him into an ally of the Israeli left and brought him into the international community. And, you know, not too long ago, we remember that the Pope invited Israeli and Palestinian leaders to the Vatican. And there, you know, just going through all these pictures that have come up today, there's a wonderful picture of Shimon Peres and Mahmoud Abbas, the Palestinian president, looking at each other like forehead to forehead the way children do and smiling. This is something that no one would have imagined, but Peres pushed it through, and he kind of, and I think President Obama in his statement talked about this, that he pushed people to imagine things they couldn't think of, and I think that will really be his legacy.
Yeah. And that will, it sounds like that's why everyone in that region, as you mentioned, is mourning the death. He definitely had some Chicago connections as well, which we will talk about coming up a little after 9 o'clock with us from Jerusalem live this morning from ABC News, Jordana Miller. Thank you, Jordana, and have a great day today. Appreciate it. All right. It is 8:48, Steve Cochran Show, Dean Richards in this morning. On WGN, and coming up, we're going to be hooking up with WGN Television. That's what you hear in the background here. We're going to be syncing up with them, joining Larry Potash and Robin Baumgarten get a review, a morning after review of the first performance of Hamilton, which made its premiere debut in Chicago last night. Preview performances began last night. So we will get to that coming up in just a couple of minutes here. And also tell you how you can win tickets to a premiere screening of what will wind up being an Oscar movie, the movie Birth of a Nation, that stars Nate Parker. He stars in it. He co-wrote it. He directed it. It's a very, very powerful movie that I saw at the Toronto Film Festival that you will have an opportunity to also see. We'll tell you how you can win tickets to that coming up in a couple of minutes. There is Larry and Robin. We're joined this morning. Last night, as I was just mentioning to the radio audience, was the premiere performance of Hamilton in Chicago at the Private Bank Theater. Preview performances are going to take place now until October the 19th, and that's when the critics will get to see it. But we wanted to get some early reviews, so we're able to talk to some folks who are actually there. And on our phone line here at WGN Radio is Corey Flournoy, who was in the audience last night. Corey, are you there?
I am here.
Good morning to you. And what was your take on the very first performance of Hamilton in Chicago?
For his first performance, the performance went pretty well. I saw Hamilton back in January with the original cast, and it was great. You know, it's interesting, you know, the music, the words, everything's exactly the same as Broadway, but the actors all have taken a different take on the roles that I saw back then. So definitely some standout performances, and definitely there's some growth. I mean, as you mentioned, it last night was the first performance. They're in previews for a couple of weeks, so I think it's going to only become stronger, and it's just going to be a perfect show for Chicago.
Yeah, what a lot of people are concerned about, you know, when a show, you know, is on Broadway and is successful as a show as Hamilton was on Broadway, winning 11 Tony Awards, will the shows that come to other cities be just as good? And as you say, you saw the original, you saw Lin-Manuel Miranda, you saw, you know, what all the buzz was about. You feel like Chicago is getting something which is of equal value?
Yeah, and in fact, it was interesting because there were some of the characters when I saw on Broadway that were good, and in this production, they're great. So there was a guy who plays Aaron Burr, Joshua Henry, his song, The Room Where It Happens, it was a different take on the song. I mean, he seemed really, you know, and confused, upset by how Hamilton had treated him. So, I mean, like, it was just interesting to see some of the performances take on a different take with the new actors and just taking with these songs that everyone knows on the soundtrack.
Yeah, what was the vibe like in the theater? You know, people at the very first performance must have been electric, I would think.
Before the show even started, I mean, when the lights went down, people were yelling and screaming. And as I mentioned, it's funny, everyone knows the words to the soundtrack. So they were singing along, and it just added to the excitement. There were a couple of times where I thought they were going to have to stop the show because of the applause.
And people singing along, distracting the performers. Well, we're going to have a lot more on that coming up here on WGN Radio, where I'm filling in for Steve Cochran this morning. Corey, thank you so much for the review. We really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you.
And just wanted to mention one other thing. We've got a special giveaway, another one of our WGN-TV Movie Club giveaways for the one of the most anticipated movies of the year, Birth of a Nation, that stars Nate Parker, Gabrielle Union, among others. I saw it at the Toronto Film Festival, and it's amazing. We've got a special screening that's coming up soon. You can win a pair of tickets by going to WGNTV.com/contests. Register your name, and we'll have an opportunity to win from there. So that's all from this end, Larry and Robin. We're going to toss it back over to you guys.
Thanks, Dean. Still to come on WGN Morning News at 9, we're talking to author Jonathan Rose about
his
new
book. All right, so there you go on the television side, coming up here on WGN Radio in our next hour. One of our favorite comedians, Sebastian Maniscalco, from Arlington Heights, native of Arlington Heights, who is just announced going to do 6 nights at the Chicago Theater. That is some kind of unprecedented. Couldn't be happier for this hometown talent. We're going to talk with Sebastian coming up in the next hour here on WGN, where it is 8:53. Take a quick break, and we'll be right back after this. So join me this coming Saturday morning. The annual AIDS Run and Walk is this coming Saturday morning at Soldier Field. We are just on the side of Soldier Field, 1410 Museum Campus Drive, to be exact. It all benefits the AIDS Foundation of Chicago, an amazing umbrella organization that works with people who are living with HIV, who are living with AIDS, helping and contributing to research on the subject, advocacy, fundraising for people who are in need, who are affected. I'm not exactly how many years I've hosted the opening ceremonies for AIDS Walk. I know it was in the early 90s when the worst of the AIDS crisis was going on. The whole composure of what it is, what AIDS is now, is completely different, but it's still vitally important. There are still lots of Chicagoans who are affected and need your help. If you can join us at the walk, we'd love to see you out there. We'll be out there bright and early. Opening ceremonies will begin at 8:30. The run starts first, and then people can walk leisurely after that, and we always have a really nice time out there. If you're not able to join us out there in person, you can go to the AIDS Foundation's website, which is AIDS. Let me get this correct here. AIDSChicago.org. AIDSChicago.org. And you can make a donation. But the annual AIDS Run and Walk is this coming Saturday morning. So have we decided what kind of chia pet that we're going to get for Steve Cochran?
It has to be a truffle.
We decided during the commercial, you know, first of all, we're all singing the chia song, all of us. That's going to be in our heads now through January 1st. But we said we need to, we need to get one or both for Steve.
He's not going to water either one of them, so.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
Beyonce's got a new album out?
Yes, she dropped a new album over the weekend.
I thought you could only drop albums on Tuesdays.
I like her bouncy songs.
I like Single Ladies.
See Dean and Abreu walking in. Beyonce, drop the R&B. We need something more bouncy, bouncy, bouncy.
Come on, let's go. Let's see some movement. Chomp, chomp.
Not really interested in your social commentary. Where can we put a ring on now? We put a ring now.
We'll run the world now, Beyonce.
Dean's hoping for an album called Cheap Commercial Stuff.
Bay.
Right. Those guys are entertaining, those two. They ought to have a regular segment on this show, those two. Oh, like around 8:10 every morning, say. That's what would be perfect. Dean Richards in for Steve today. Steve taking the rest of the week off. Happy to be here with you with a bunch of stuff still coming up. We're going to follow up a little bit more on the Chicago connection with the late former Israeli Prime Minister Shimon Peres. We'll get to that coming up in just a little bit. We're going to be talking with our pal, Sebastian Maniscalco. Those of you who follow comedy certainly know his name. He has become one of the hot stand-up comedians in America, but is from Arlington Heights. Super nice guy. We've had him on our TV morning show several times. I know he's been here on WGN Radio several times as well. So we're going to catch up with him because, you know, it's a big deal. When you're a stand-up comedian, you know, you work at Zany's, you work at the Laugh Factory, you work, you know, some of the comedy clubs. Those are pretty good gigs. You get the Chicago Theater. That's where Ellen DeGeneres does stand-up. That's where Jerry Seinfeld does stand-up. And that is where Sebastian Maniscalco was signed to do a night of stand-up that turned into two nights, that turned into three, four, five. Now they have just announced a sixth night with Arlington Heights' own Sebastian Maniscalco. He's really funny. But I was scouring my memory. I can't think of, Josephine, the amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat, played multiple nights, of course, at the Chicago Theater for years. I can't think of any stand-up comedian who's done six nights at the Chicago Theater. That's got to be some kind of record-breaking, I would think. And for it being a Chicago-area comedian as well, extra feather in his cap. So we'll get to that coming up in a little while. I don't know what it means exactly, but it's trending on Twitter. Happy National Beer Day. Today is National Beer Day.
Dave should know about it.
Okay,
he brought it up yesterday.
Miss Sneaks Hooch into the dance thing.
What? No,
sure,
no.
Ask Mary.
I did not do
what
that.
What is the Sneak Hooch? What?
My husband did. Oh, I was in a dance showcase thing over the weekend. And
you were drunk?
I was not. I did my dance first.
You had a flask and, fell out of your purse?
And
what?
My husband later rewarded me with a sippy cup that he brought in for me because they didn't have any liquor there.
What was in the sippy cup?
Just some wine, some Chardonnay.
Oh, that's nice.
It's okay, isn't it?
Are you a beer drinker?
No.
It's National Beer Day.
I don't really
Day.
Drink beer that much. It's too filling. But happy beer day anyway.
I enjoy an occasional beer.
Yes.
I enjoy it like on a nice hot summer
sure.
day.
Sure, oh, what's better than that?
I like a light beer, like a summer shandy type of beer. I like that.
That's not even beer.
It is. I like it.
That's fake beer. That's like beer somebody accidentally spilt perfume in. And then
I'm going to have that taste in my mouth right? the next time I drink it. I think it's gone now.
That's what it's. That's
they bring
what it
in
is.
The Oktoberfest beer. No.
I'm with you, Dave, on this hot summer day, cold beer. Nothing better than that.
At a game. At a Cubs game. It's awesome.
At a Cubs game.
Yeah.
It's awesome. Although, most opening days, you know, you go out there and you're excited. It's your first day at Wrigley Field for the new season.
Yes.
You go out there and, you know, I've got my peanuts and you order a beer and it's like 30 degrees outside. It's like, why am I drinking cold beer on a freezing day like this?
Well, you have to, though.
You have to. Mm-hmm. It's absolute tradition to do that. So You know, those of you getting your Egg McMuffin right now, maybe you want to swing and get a six-pack as well.
Sure, sure. Happy National Beer Day.
Glad we can endorse that sort of thing here on the big 720. It's 9:15. Mary's got a check of traffic, and then we're going to talk live with Sebastian Maniscalco. Oh, no, we don't have traffic here, do we? Can you give me one just to humor
sure,
me?
Sure, because there's still a lot of stuff going on. We still have this jackknife tractor trailer. It's on the inbound side of the Bishop Ford past 130th. Have to watch for that. And still some heavy delays coming in on the Eisenhower. It's an hour 25 from 53, hour 10 from Mannheim, and 36 outbound to 53. And still about 50 minutes on the inbound Kennedy. Clearing, though, on the Edens, the Stevenson, and the Dan Ryan. Dean?
We're going to go to a quick break and then chat with one of the funniest guys in America, Sebastian Maniscalco, next on WGN.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
Immigrant parents, they put you to work real early, okay? Been working since I've been 8 years old. Watching TV, my father walked in the living room. He's like, hey, go start a business. Now? They told me, growing up, who had what I wanted in the neighborhood. They didn't buy us anything. We're like, Dad, can we get a dog? Hey, you want a dog? Three houses down, they got a dog.
One of my favorites.
You
want
to pet something with fur? You walk three houses down, you pet the dog, and then you come back here and cut my grass. What?
The life of Sebastian Maniscalco, one of our favorites. Coming to the Chicago Theater, a longtime friend of the WGN TV Morning News, where we were first introduced to him. Been here on WGN Radio a million times. The pride of Arlington Heights, Sebastian on the phone line with us. Good morning. I'm glad to see you're still taking our phone calls, Mr. Chicago Theater.
Oh, yeah. Big Chicago Theater shows coming up in November. We're excited to come home. It's always... It's always strange coming home, especially performing, and my father always wanting tickets to hand out to people that he has received favors from over the years. So looking forward to that.
This is payback for that. And, well, plenty of opportunities for your dad to pay back the favors because they just announced a sixth show at the Chicago Theater. I've been racking my brain to think of anybody else who's done six nights of comedy at the Chicago Theater. Sebastian, I think it may be you and Donny Osmond and Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat.
Oh, I'm telling you, that's good company. Well, out of the six shows, three of them are for friends and family, and then the other three are open to the public.
Because you've got that many. Italian guy in the Chicago area, you've got that much friends and family that are going to fill up the seats in there.
Oh, you got that right. I mean, I grew up in the northwest suburbs of Arlington Heights, and I went to Rolling Meadows High School, and then later on went to Northern Illinois University. So, you know, that's my stomping grounds. I got a lot of Italian friends, Greek friends. I grew up with a lot of those guys, and it's going to be fun to come back home in November and see everybody again.
I got to think it's going to be great. I think that's Thanksgiving weekend also, right?
Yeah, yeah. It's a Friday, Saturday, and Sunday right after Thanksgiving. So Friday, which is Black Friday, instead of standing in line like an idiot to buy a TV set for $500, come down to Chicago Theater and laugh a little bit.
Come on and have some enjoyment instead of going crazy with the lines and getting in debt. Two shows Friday, the 25th. Two shows Saturday, the 26th. And now two shows on Sunday, the 27th, you have to be pinching yourself. I mean, it wasn't that long ago, Sebastian, really. I mean, you're doing stand-up comedy, but kind of Vince Vaughn picks you to be part of that comedy caravan, and it seems like your life pretty much changed after that.
It did. You know, that kind of catapulted me into the headlining spot in major clubs across the country, and that was in 2005, and progressively every year, you know, something has happened where it's boosted my visibility up, whether it be a Jimmy Fallon appearance, a Showtime special, comedians in cars getting coffee with Seinfeld. So, yeah, I mean, people seem to be gravitating towards the material, which is always great. You know, there's never a lack of material for me, you know, being an observational comedian, seeing things around me on a day-to-day basis, plus plucking life stories from my family is always fun, and And my family's always very, very happy that they've made the act, quote unquote. So, yeah, it's been crazy.
You wouldn't be doing this well if we didn't act the way we act, in other words, is what you said, right? Like that?
Pretty much, pretty much. If the society keeps behaving the way they're behaving, I'm going to be in work for a long time. So, yeah, it's always nuts to kind of just look around and see what you see on a day-to-day basis and make fun of it.
Do you, you know, also growing up here in the Chicago area, you know, so I have friends, you know, that I've known since grammar school, that, you know, that some guys that I still know and hang out with, I've known since I was 5 years old. So, you know, you get that kind of history in your own hometown. Do you also get people going, hey, I got something great that you could put on the TV, like you could do doing your act, like something like people suggesting content to you?
Oh, all the time. You get somebody that thinks whatever they're thinking is funny, and you hear it, and then you're like, that's why you're not doing comedy. So, just leave the comedy to me, and you just laugh. So, yeah, you got a bunch of people always, you know, pitching jokes or scenarios that they've gone through, and rarely do you find a gem, but sometimes, you know, you're like, oh, yeah, that is pretty funny, yeah. But I draw from my own life.
Yeah, hey, Sebastian, I was at the 7-Eleven, and I was eating a Slim Jim, and I dropped it on the floor. That's funny, yeah. Right?
Oh, yeah, then you got to do the fake laugh. And go, oh, yeah, no, I'll use that tomorrow. Yeah, right.
Does your family like that you draw from, you know, is that a feather in their cap, a compliment to them? Or, you know, are they like, hey, you're, you know, don't tell them all our secrets. You're going to put all our dirty laundry out there.
Yeah, well, I think my father, who's been a brunt of a lot of the jokes that I do, is really excited that he's a big part of my act. But now I'm getting whispers from my mother going, how come you don't talk about me? You know, I do a lot of funny stuff, too. And I think I'm going to start talking about my mother a little bit more. It's just that my father is such a big personality and a big character that there tends to be a lot of humor coming out of his mouth. So maybe this year I'll... And then I have a sister who nobody knows that I even have a sister because I never talk about her in my act. But, yeah, there's plenty of people who go around. Although my wife's family I've been talking a lot about, and I might not be invited to Thanksgiving dinner.
Right. After, if you need some place to go, you're welcome at my family's if they shut you out. You know, it's got to happen one of these years. You know what all this sounds like to me? You know, talking about your dad, your mom, your sister, your in-laws. I'm smelling sitcom here. Is that something that's somewhere in the back of your mind?
No, you know, it's funny you mention that. We did a sitcom, a pilot episode for NBC, and it did not get picked up. And it was loosely based on my life. My father was played by Tony Danza. My wife was played by Vanessa Lachey. And we had a great director in Scott Ellis. So we made a TV show, which was crazy. I mean, from the wardrobe, the set design, the casting, and it was a great experience to go through. Unfortunately, NBC didn't see it the way we saw it, which is, you know, as you well know, being in the entertainment industry, that's how the cookie crumbles sometimes. But, you know, I'm just resetting right now, and I got another idea that I'm working on, and hopefully we'll get that on TV. But in the meantime, I'm just announced my 2017 tour yesterday, and it's got a lot of cities that I haven't been to, and we got a Showtime special coming out this Saturday, October 1st at 10 o'clock. So until I get on TV, I'll just do my stand-up comedy.
Yeah, which is hilarious. But, I mean, just an example of, like, the short-sightedness of TV networks, literally of some of the crap that's on television. And, you know, we know, I mean, if you're familiar with Sebastian's work, how hilarious it is, how, you know, relatable. It's like relatable observational comedy that is so funny. But, you know, for some reason with the knucklehead executives, it doesn't click. It's going to happen. It's going to happen at some point because you're just too funny. And, you know, what you do is just so relatable. I think it's got to happen for you.
Well, I appreciate it. I sound like my father now. Well, you didn't get picked up any other day. And I go, yeah, Ben, I'm sorry. So, yeah, you hear it all the time, but I appreciate you saying that.
You want me to go talk to somebody? You want me to fly to Burbank and talk to somebody?
Can you do that? Can somebody help me out over here?
Get your dad and get a couple of buddies of mine, and we'll all go talk to somebody in Burbank. see if we can change their minds a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I appreciate that, but hopefully it will happen soon. But
yeah, it will. It definitely will. Honestly, mostly the reason I wanted to catch up with you today is to say congratulations. Six shows at the Chicago Theater. I mean, this is where Seinfeld plays. As I said earlier on the show, this is where Ellen DeGeneres plays. You know, this is where the big names in comedy play. And when they come, they're here one, two nights tops. They're not doing six shows at the Chicago Theater. This is a big deal for a really, really funny guy who also happens to be one of Chicago's very own. So we're happy for you. We're proud of you. And we just wanted to let you know that.
It's very sweet of you to do that, and I can't wait to get back home and do my shows and say hello to everybody. So I do appreciate it.
All right, buddy. We'll talk to you soon, and I'll let my mom know I'm bringing a friend to Thanksgiving. You know, just in case. You never know.
Oh, please do.
Yeah, you think your family's dysfunctional? Way to get a load of mine. We'll talk to you soon, man. Thanks very much. Again, Chicago Theater, the 25th, 26th, 27th, two shows each day. Sebastian Maniscalco, and tickets are available at Chicago Theater box office and Ticketmaster. Thanks, buddy. We'll talk to you soon. Quick break, and we'll be right back. More of the Steve Cochran Show next on WGN.
From the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
At 9:43, it's Dean Richards in for Steve today. Normally you catch us here on Sunday morning on WGN Radio. Catch us from 8 until 8:30, roughly, on Steve's show here Monday through Friday. We always have lots of laughs. And, of course, catch me on the WGN-TV Morning News. Tomorrow, on the tomorrow, Dave and Andrea, a.k.a. DNA, will be filling in here from Steve. Andrea is going to be back from Greece.
Yeah, she's bringing pictures. We'll show those tomorrow.
And a live goat, I heard also.
Oh, is that right? I hadn't heard
yeah, but that's,
that part.
That's a traditional gift. When a Greek goes to Greece, they bring their co-workers live goats when they nice. Come, when cool. they come back. So
she said she is bringing us something.
Yeah. Get ready. So you guys will be filling in tomorrow, and Justin Kaufman on Friday. But tomorrow on the TV Morning News, I'm going to be out grilling again. We're doing something with the Chicago firefighters at the firehouse in back of Wrigley Field.
Oh, okay.
On Waveland Avenue back there. There's a charity event that's going on. So, you know, firemen are, you know, noted for being like the greatest cooks in the world, greatest chefs in the world. So I'm going to go out there, probably learn a few things from them, and I'm going to try to not set myself on fire. I don't care how good these firemen are, though. I'll bet they don't have the grill daddy.
I bet they don't.
I'll bet they don't have the grill daddy. The greatest thing ever. Dave Ennett has singularly changed my summer this year by telling me about the grill daddy, the greatest grill cleaning device in the history of grill cleaning devices.
Okay, so I also told John DeCoste about it.
Yeah.
And he brought me the Grill Daddy Pro,
yeah,
which is a larger Grill Daddy with a handle on it, so it gives you better leverage.
Yeah, that's the one that I have.
Okay.
That's the one. I saw them both. Mm-hmm. The regular Grill Daddy, it's like a regular steel brush, except it's a steel brush that you fill with water, and you can turn it on and off. Mm-hmm. And as you scrape your grill with the steel brush, turn the water on, and it steam cleans your grill
right
at the same time. And my grill is immaculate this year. It's unbelievable.
I'm so happy, Dean.
I cannot tell you how much I look forward to grilling now just for that. But I bought the Grill Daddy Pro or Plus or whatever it's called. It's got a back handle on
yes.
it. And you run it on the grill like you're shaving wood, you know, like one of those plane sanders. And It's fantastic. And life-changing.
Are you going to take it to the firehouse?
Of course I am. Take it with me everywhere I go.
I love it. Those guys are going to be so impressed.
I have it in my car right now. You know, anytime you can impress a fireman, yeah. you can outdo a fireman, which I think I may be able to do. Maybe they're pretty good cooks. Maybe they already know about the whole thing. A couple of showbiz stories that kind of broke this morning that are pretty big stories. Jon Favreau, one of our favorites to talk to, who, as you know, has appeared in many films. He directed the first Iron Man movie, directed what will definitely be in my top five movies of 2016, The Jungle Book. I love that movie. I still think that's one of the best movies of the year. So creative. Thanks to Jon Favreau. Just announced is going to be doing a live-action version of The Lion King. I know it's been done animated before, but just announced this morning, Favreau is going to do a live-action version of it, so we're going to look forward to that. Another big showbiz story to break this morning. You know, we talked with Lin-Manuel Miranda, the creator and Tony Award-winning star of Hamilton on Broadway, last week when he was here in Chicago, and just announced this morning he's been signed to host Saturday Night Live. That is going to be on October the 8th, so a week from this Saturday. Margot Robbie is hosting this weekend. That's going to be the season premiere, and you know they're going to have a field day with the presidential debates on this weekend's show. It's going to be crazy.
Oh, can you imagine? Those writers have been going crazy.
All they have to do is
so much material.
Show actual footage from the debate. They don't even have to write any comedy.
It's funny enough.
It was so crazy, but I can't wait to see. Who's doing Donald Trump on the show now?
Is that Daryl?
Daryl Hammond.
Yes.
Daryl Hammond.
That's Daryl Hannah.
that would be pretty different.
I think that's who it is, isn't it? Doesn't he do Trump?
Because it was Taryn Killian, who they just let go, but they switched it over to Daryl Hannah. Daryl, look at that. You got me doing it. Daryl Hammond. They switched it over to Daryl Hammond shortly before that. So it's going to be Daryl Hammond as Trump and Kate McKinnon. Does Hillary Clinton. Hilarious.
Yes, great.
She is great.
So that's going to be super funny. So that's going to be this weekend. Margot Robbie is the host, who was in Suicide Squad. The musical guest is going to be the weekend. That should be great. And then the week after that, just announced this morning, Lin-Manuel Miranda, super talented. He should be hilariously funny on the show. If the material's there, if the writing is good, to me, that's what makes or breaks in SNL these days. It's all about the writing. That's going to be the week after, and 21 Pilots will be the musical guest that night and making their SNL debut as well.
And would you be surprised if either candidate showed up on this week's show?
I would not be a bit surprised. I would not be a bit surprised to see the real Donald or the real Hillary this week. It would be genius of them. But will we see both of them, though? Would they both appear?
I can't imagine that. But you never know.
They've done crazy. I mean, remember when the Tina Fey was doing Sarah Palin
with the real
Sarah Palin?
Well, they did Hillary with
the real Hillary
with Kate McKinnon.
Yeah. So who knows what's going to happen? It's going to be must watch night. But all this talk about SNL hosts got me thinking a little bit of who our favorite hosts have been on SNL. Alec Baldwin comes to my mind when I think of my favorite, almost always hits a home run when he's on as a guest host. I got to put Alec Baldwin on that list. I wanted to open up the phones and see who you liked best. Walken is so great. Mark, come on. The cowbell? You kidding me? It's like one of the greatest. He can't remember his lines. Watching him read the cue cards is hilarious, but I love that. It's like a train wreck that I love watching. Who have been your favorite guest hosts on the Saturday Night Live? Why? 312-981-7200. Let's talk about it when we come back.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
Guess what? I got a fever, and the only prescription is more cowbell.
I got a fever. Walken is so great. 9:54, Bill and Wendy coming up in a few minutes over most of this same station. Your favorite SNL host with the news this morning, Lin-Manuel Miranda, going to be the guest host on October the 8th on the text line Buck Henry. Wow, that's from the old days. Samurai dry cleaners. Remember that. Peyton Manning, someone says, the best on SNL. Every sketch was a home run.
He was really good.
He was exceptionally funny on the show. Justin Timberlake, great host on the SNL. Got to agree with that one as well. So back in the day when he was doing videos with Andy Samberg. Paul in Tinley Park, hi, you're on WGN.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Morning.
Morning. Yeah, you know, two come to mind, definitely. I know you heard, I already heard you say Justin Timberlake. He's great on there. And, of course, the one and only Steve Martin, for sure.
Oh, of course. Steve Martin. Has he done it recently? I'm trying to remember the last time I saw him.
Maybe last year or something like that.
Yeah, I kind of run hot and cold with SNL.
Most recently in 2009. Does that seem right?
I mean, honestly, I would have guessed something like that because I don't think I've seen him for a while. But of course, when I think of Steve Martin hosting SNL, it's with Gilda Radner. It's when he was one of the wild and crazy guys with Dan Aykroyd. I mean,
he did that sketch when he was on last. I think it was in 2009 or 10, something like that. They did that sketch. It was great.
The wild and crazy guys again with Dan Aykroyd and like some of the younger stars of today, right?
Yes, yeah, I think Dan Aykroyd was on as well because they all did some sort of like Five Timers Club sketch, and then they went into that sketch. It was just hilarious.
Yeah, good stuff, good memories. Thanks, Paul. Have a great day. Richard, you're on WGN. Good morning.
Hey, first off, Dean, I got to tell you, man, it is an honor and a pleasure to call and actually speak to you.
Aren't you nice?
I have read your or listened to your reviews of films for decades, man, and you know, aside from, you know, the original Siskel and Ebert, you have always been my favorite film critic.
Wow.
You are
so nice. Thank you. I'll have what he's drinking. I'll have whatever he's drinking.
Have a double. But as far as my favorite host goes, I would say who's really good consistently all the time, and he's done it probably a half dozen times at least, Tom Hanks. And not only that, Tom Hanks has been on there when he hasn't been the host. He'll just show up for one skit. He'll be in, and then he'll be out real quick. But, you know, he's great because, you know, he started out doing, you know, with a comedic background, doing comedies and sitcoms and so forth.
Yep.
And then he seamlessly transitioned into doing drama. So my children, who are in their 20s, they only know Tom Hanks to do drama.
Serious actor, right.
A serious actor, yeah. But he goes on Saturday Night Live, and he's completely, you know, he's a buffoon when he needs to be a buffoon. And he's the straight man in a skit when he needs to be the straight man in a skit. And whether it's a skit where he just does one word, he'll just stand there and maybe do one word, or he'll do a skit where he has to completely carry the whole thing. He is phenomenal.
Flawless, I
agree. And I put him in the same category as like Alec Baldwin or Justin Timberlake.
Yeah, they're
great. You don't necessarily think that they can do sketch comedy, but when they get on there, they kill.
Yeah.
You know
who's another one? Melissa McCarthy. Anytime that she's on as the host, hilarious. Right. Melissa McCarthy every single time. Two words about Tom Hanks' comedy chops, Bosom Buddies. Enough said.
Absolutely.
The TV show.
I want to say I was the only person who watched that show when it was on Wednesday nights on ABC back in 1980.
Wow.
It was my favorite show, man. I got to tell you, it really was.
That's awesome.
I was going to say Melissa McCarthy, but her background is sketch comedy anyway, so you would expect nothing less.
She's still funny, though.
Someone where you just, and she's phenomenal. I watch her all the time. She's one of my favorites.
But I know what you mean about the unexpected factor with Tom Hanks. I got to run because we got to get the news on, Richard. Thank you so much for the call, the nice words. I appreciate it. We're going to make room for Bill and Wendy coming up next.